Celtic Stuff Live, the only toll-free call-in webcast produced specifically for Celtics fans. With your hosts, Jughead, JB, and the Duke. Celtic Stuff Live. And now, Jughead, JB, and the Duke.
Good evening, everybody. The waiting is over. Doc Rivers has the extension. Let the complaining begin. Actually, I guess they weren't waiting for the show. The complaining is all over the internet. We're going to get to that a little bit later. Tonight we have Scott Souza from the Metro West Daily News and the Boston Herald. He's written a couple of nice articles, got an interview with Ainge. We're going to get to him at 7:15 in the first segment. JB and John, welcome to the show.
Evening. We on a related topic, our friend Peter May today said that the Celtics were being run by idiots. And on the other hand, Mr. Mark Murphy of the Herald said ownership made a great move by only signing Doc for 1 year.
I guess it's all the same meaning. It's just a certain level of tolerance that's different.
Is that killing damning with faint praise?
Well, I got to tell you, I know there are very few people that are okay with this deal. But personally, you know, I think if Doc doesn't get it done next year, they're going to can him anyway. And, you know, that's Wick's $5 million to waste or blow. As long as it's only a one-year deal, I'm fine with it. You know, proof is in the pudding. I'm fine with him coming back as a lame duck coach. And it doesn't really bother me.
Let's say they fire him by Thanksgiving or Christmas. They're out $10 million bucks.
But that's not my expensive. $10 million. I mean, I'm not really concerned about it. They can, you know, that's their move. I don't think that Danny has enough leeway that he could stick with Doc if Doc has another horrid season with a healthy roster. And, you know, that's the organization's issue to deal with. As far as I'm concerned, you know, if Doc doesn't get it done, I expect to see another coach in here. And if he does get it done, then Danny gets applauded for having the patience.
My problem with it is twofold. One is that's an extra $5 million that's not available for another player. And secondly, ownership, who may not want to be paying two coaches at once or that much extra money, may decide to let the season play out and send Ainge away with Rivers, which I don't think is right. But maybe, you know, Danny would only have himself to blame since he seems to have been tying himself to Doc, and he owes him something. And you know, some people have implied maybe they wanted to keep Doc's mouth shut about the tanking, which may have started last July. You know, when he kept saying that, there was that great quote about you know, Doc has been a good soldier, and you know, some of you want to blame him for tanking, some of you want to blame him for not winning games, but either he's a bad coach or he's looking at the big picture. You know, it can't be both. And, you know, I don't want him looking at the big picture too much, but, you know, he's kind of dancing around there. And it's kind of some funny quote by Danny, but it almost implies there was a plan in place.
Yeah, there's been a number of funny quotes from Danny's done a lot of talking over the last week. I know a lot of people were confused with one quote, and we'll get to a lot of this later. But, you know, I think the post on Celtics blog was "Say what?" And it's from the Globe. But, you know, we'll get to that a little bit later. But it was a little wordy and difficult to understand. But I think I know where Danny's coming from. It was just a little convoluted, and, you know, it almost made Doc Rivers look even worse, almost like Danny was admitting to tanking or something. I don't know. It was rather all rather confusing. But, you know, if you read it six times, I think you started to understand what Ainge was inferring. But and not only that, you know, he had a great interview, a 20, 30-minute-long interview on WEEI. You know, we're going to talk about that a little bit in the second segment as well. One of the things we probably won't get into too much, but he did, you know, answer publicly to Ian Thompson's accusations in the SI.com article saying that, you know, the team didn't have any scouts. And he did talk about the program synergy which was something that Eric Weiss mentioned last week on the show as a program that's pretty extensive in its scouting. And I've actually seen the program and used the program briefly, and it is. It's one heck of a program, and you can certainly scout players extensively and more efficiently than going to the games because of the way that the program is set up. So I'm not so sure that that's really a concern, but I think wasn't that the nature of Peter May's, you know, Danny's an idiot comments?
No. It was partly over their treating of Telfair.
Telfair, okay.
And there was another element to it, and let me see if I can find that.
Well, while you look for that, John, yeah, you didn't even comment on. I don't even think you've commented since the show started.
I'm not sure there was enough airspace between the two of you when we started that off. But yeah, hi guys, how are you?
who's this guy, Jug?
Yeah, I'm the silent partner, guys.
See the guest this week?
He was thumbing it on my way home.
First of all, I'm going to completely ignore the both of you because I'm going to talk. No, first of all, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. I spent the morning running in a 5K road race, Mother's Day road race, which is laughable if you knew me because I'm not a runner, but this is what my wife decided. So
are you more of a roller?
I'm a rocker and a roller, in fact. I'm a lover and not a fighter. Anyway, I'm exhausted. I'm spent right now. I'm not sure I have left. I've got my second wind, though, because I'm here to talk about the Celtics. I'm here to talk about Doc Rivers, and I think it's, you know, just to weigh in my quick 2 cents on this, I don't really care if Whit Grosbeck blows his money on you know, Doc Rivers. That's his deal. It doesn't affect the salary cap. It doesn't affect the luxury tax. It's his bottom line. If he wants to waste it on Doc Rivers, that's his problem, not mine. The problem that I have with it is that if it in some way sets back the development of the players of this team and somehow sets them back from their ability to win, that's the bottom line to me. And, you know, that's a very simple thing to say, but that's my concern. And I'm not sure it's been proven to me that somebody else coming in would do a better job. And I think that's what, you know, if I knew that there was someone out there that I thought this guy would come in and do a better job than Doc Rivers, I'd agree with you right now. Now, a year from now, that could be a completely different discussion, whether Doc Rivers has gotten this team to the playoffs or not. It depends upon where they are in their development as a team, as young players, as guys who are trying to figure out how they fit into the NBA. But, if Wick wants to blow his money, $5 million or whatever, fine. I just hope that he doesn't use this as an excuse to hold on to him longer than he should. If things are going bad by, you know, Thanksgiving, you know, cut him. You know, they should be canning him. And I'm going to be the first one there. And I hope the two of you guys will join me because it'd be ridiculous if that was the case. So,
I'm fearful.
We'll get into this a lot more with Scott I think this is going to be the type of thing we're going to be talking about for a long time, well after ping pong balls have dropped and so forth.
Well, the other element that Jug was asking me about Peter May's article, Peter was talking about Rick Carlisle. He says he's out there for the taking and has proven he can win in the regular season and postseason with all sorts of rosters and lunatics. So, you know, that's the other element in keeping Doc is that we may miss out on the chance. Rick Adelman was the one I was looking to see come in. There won't be so many coaches, and there won't be as many opportunities next fall, next winter, as there are now.
I'm not so sure. Rick Carlisle even said he was just going to sit back and see what happens. Now, maybe he means May 22nd, but maybe he means, after the offseason. Well, because
he's got a good
offer. Let's not forget Cliff Ray. I mean, the star of the coaching staff in the last 12 months is Clifford Ray. There's no guarantee that if Rick Adelman or Rick Carlisle or Rick Rischel or any other Ricks out there that you know want to come in and coach this team. There's no guarantee that Cliff Ray is still on this assistant coaching staff. And to me, that would be almost a bigger tragedy.
It'd be a travesty,
given the two guys who, you know, in just less than 10 days. we have a chance to have on our team, that would be a concern to me. And you know, you don't hire a coach for the assistant coach, but anybody who's watched this team knows that Clifford Gray has made an impact in just a year on the job, and with a healthy Kendrick Perkins this summer, I'd like to see a little bit more of that.
Good point, John. Doc today was quoted saying that he was keeping all his coaches. He says he loved his staff.
Yeah, I did see that too, and he Clifford Gray and Kevin Eastman were the two that he pulled out. Didn't hear him say anything about Tony Brown, but you know, Tony Brown's name has even been floated out there. You know, do you think somebody's going to be courting Tony Brown in the offseason? Possibly?
No.
24 win team?
I mean, you wouldn't think so. You wouldn't think so.
No. They don't take assistants off losing teams. Not usually. Unless he's best friends with somebody. But no.
His best friends with Carlisle. I mean, Carlisle.
I was going to say, Carlisle. Like, maybe not necessarily head coaching. Courtship.
Oh, all right. Well, that's different. A lateral move, sure. That could happen.
Oh, I think Carlisle was talking about him as his replacement in Indiana.
He was, and that may not happen, but it doesn't mean that somebody isn't still interested in getting Tony to come in, though, right?
How do you mean? Do you mean as
well, like if Rick Carlisle gets hired somewhere else? I mean, that's a real coded way for Rick Carlisle to say, oh, I'd love to have Tony Brown join me in my next venture.
I see what you're saying. Well, if he's under contract, then a lateral move. I don't. If it's similar to the NFL rules, like where you can't interview, you aren't automatically allowed the permission to interview for a job unless it's a lateral move. I don't know if that's the case in the NBA, but
they'd have to negotiate a draft pick, like when we got Chris Wallace, something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're coming up on the break already, if you can believe it, but. I wanted to pull out one quote from Scott's article today, just because Danny finally kind of addressed, you know, something that's kind of been on the internet that hasn't really ever just taken a, you know, just talking about how other teams don't value our young players. And Danny took the time to address that in his interview with Scott Souza, who's going to be joining us in about 3 minutes. And the quote that he had, I thought was pretty good. You know, he said, "It's crazy about some perspectives. We've been criticized because we value our young players too much, which I think is just hysterical. I think of the teams that call and want our young players, they're trying to give me a veteran. Why are they trying to give me their veteran player? Because they don't want them. They want our young guys." And he goes on to say, "People around the league know that we have been involved in some trade talks pretty heavily in the past couple of years involving the young guys. I think we have a realistic evaluation of them. I love them. I don't want to trade our young guys, but I would in the right deal. It's hard because I know there are guys who are 28 years old who are better players than our players are today, but who will be better players in a couple of years?" And I, you know, this part I do like. And he kind of goes on to rip Rick Pitino, you know, justifiably so, for trading away, giving up on some young guys too soon. And I, you know, you can't fault Danny for not making the same mistakes that's been made here before. That's for sure.
Yeah, that was a great quote. And he talked about if Pitino hadn't had a relationship with Ron Mercer, they might have gone after Tracy McGrady.
Right, and to pair him with Chauncey Billups. Yeah, that was a great quote.
If he'd had a little patience, think of the backcourt that we could have had with McGrady and Billups. Yep.
And that is something that's nice to think about, you know. And when you think of Gerald Green, considering that he's drawn all those comparisons, you know, right now, based on the crunch and the fact that you're hoping Tony Allen's going to come back 100%, Gerald Green is, you know, pretty much the number one trade bait on this team, but it could come back to bite us in some respects as well. But it all depends on what happens, you know, in the next couple of weeks here and then going towards June, you know, the end of June for the draft, because, you know, this team could have so much of a surplus, they're going to have to trade some of these guys or they're not going to have a chance to develop.
Well, if they don't get a center, if they take a wing player, that's absolutely true. They either have to trade the pick or one or two guys have to go.
Yep, that's very true. Well, we are we're going to be going to the break here in about 30 seconds. When we come back, we're going to have Scott Souza. He's been pumping out articles lately. Good friend of the show. He's been on basically since the beginning, I'd say. I think last August was his first appearance on the show. First major media guest on our show other than Gary Tanguay, who gave us the sweet bone-on-bone comments last summer. But we're going to go to this break, and when we come back, Scott Souza from the Metro West Daily News and the Boston Herald. Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see, and digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
Sold a million one. Thank you. Bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company, specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
Yeah, we're back. This is a request from an emailer this week to play a little Black Roots. I'm digging it. I haven't listened to reggae in a long time.
Good stuff.
It creates some,
yeah, it is.
Summertime, you know?
Everybody's feeling it this spring, you know? And, you know, again, we're in the season of hope and promise and, you know, I know everybody's a little anxious about May 22nd, but, you know, right now we can dream. Right now we've got 2 weeks to dream and a ton of quotes to debate. And I have to say, you know, Scott Souza, who's coming on here in just a second, is at the core of a lot of those quotes. Super appreciated. Scott, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on yet again. Scott, you with us?
Yeah, the music's kind of loud.
Oh, it's too loud.
Anything you said during the whole music introduction there, but sure was insightful. I was too busy reggaeing out here.
I'm sure you got your tie-dyed shirt on.
If you said all bad things about me during that whole introduction, I would never have known the difference.
No. I don't know if you read the promo that we put up for the show, but you are highly lauded. And it went all over the internet. We put it up on every message board that we knew of.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, no, well, and we appreciate we appreciate your column, especially this morning. We looked to have a pretty dull show, I thought, until that one came out. But you really have a lot of meat and potatoes in there. Now, you were able to. Did you sit down with Danny and Waltham, or was it done by phone, Scott?
Yeah, I actually was able to sit down with him for quite a while. The headline, just a tad misleading. It wasn't designed as a one-on-one interview. New England Cable News was there at the beginning, but you know they got they needed and headed out, and I was able to sit with him for quite a while. You don't always have that opportunity, and touch on about a bunch of different subjects. And fortunately, I was able to get the room to get that into the edition and up on www.metrowestdailynews.com. So it worked out.
You, I guess, are the first one that managed to ask him anything about Sebastian Telfair.
And you know, I wasn't sure because, you know, I've had some emails with Grossbeck, and he, you know, said after a little while that he wasn't going to be able to comment on it anymore, and that's, you know, that's understandable that, you know, everybody's welcome to give a no comment. They don't always have to talk to reporters, and I thought we might not hear that much more about it, but when I asked Danny a few questions about it, he was without going into great specifics, he was willing to talk and at least give me the information that that I relayed in the column today. And you know, some of the stuff I thought was a little bit interesting that they have been in contact. He mentioned that Wick had been in contact with Sebastian since the nameplate
incident
or whatever. And, you know, you're led to believe from some of the quotes from Sebastian Telfair's agent after the fact that was a
a major public slap in the face, but perhaps they've gotten over it. And Danny had even said, never say never. He had said, even though his nameplate's not back yet. I think that said, the chances of Sebastian Telfair playing for the Celtics again are probably slim, but he did put a somewhat more optimistic tone on it than what we had been led to believe over the past couple of weeks. It was just basically that this person was, exiled completely and was not one of those Harry Potter, the name who shall not be mentioned at this point in time. It was a little bit warmer than that.
Well, it also showed Danny's kind of difficulty is trying to trade him. Everybody knows he's trying to trade him, and Wick pulls his nameplate off the locker. It kind of makes it a little bit harder to trade for decent value. And here, Danny's backing up and saying, we haven't put his nameplate back yet. but he's a good kid, and I could see him playing for the Celtics again, but I think he'd be better off in another environment. So, if nothing else, Ainge is trying to build a little support or foundation for trading Telfair without having to take back, a bag of bottle caps.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. And, honestly, and a lot of people have actually mentioned this since the fact, and chances are Sebastian Telfair wasn't going to be back with the Celtics next year anyway. I mean, when he left after the last game of the season, he did not, he said goodbye to a couple of different people and was one of the first ones out the door. He did not seem like a player who was intending on playing another game with the Celtics then, or at least thought that he would play another game with the Celtics then. It might not have been his wish to be traded, but, you got the feeling that he thought that he wouldn't be back here next year, so this may have just pushed that situation along considerably further. As far as what his value was, I don't know what his value was before. Probably, I don't know if you would degrade him to the level of just trade contract filler, but the salary thing would probably be included to make some other deal work, and that would probably be how it would go on with him, and maybe he'll get a chance to go to a situation where he does have a little bit more of a chance, and where there's a system that's more conducive to his style of play, and that he might be able to put together a productive NBA career after all. But chances are, I would think that it would not be in Boston.
Yeah, I think the kid can play, but he may be one of these kids. They just look so clean. They smile. They're polite. They use all the right language, but they're always in trouble. We probably all grew up with somebody like that,
That guy was me.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, and I've, written a little bit about Sebastian, and a couple of other people have. Jessica at Hoop World wrote something about him similar. But, pointing to the fact that he is a very likable guy. I think he's a generally nice guy, but, this is now the depending on your take of the public.
Yeah, it's number three.
Down there in New York, it's either number two or number three, and even if the New York situation wasn't his fault, he still had bad lapses in judgment during that whole stretch where he didn't tell the Celtics about it right away. They kind of didn't find out about it until the preseason game the next night, and that put them in a weird position where they had to lie to the press, and I'm sure they weren't appreciative of that. So he certainly has errors in judgment that keep cropping up. So, and I don't know how much in terms of the paranoia factor that goes on with that. I don't know how much of that is in his own mind and how much of that is reality, but there may be something to that too, where he's mentioned that New York athletes and New York stars have become targets of nefarious different groups, and from some of the things his lawyer was saying, we're led to believe that that's why he felt the need to have a gun on him. And again, it's not a excuse, not a necessarily a good reason, but it may make a little bit of sense in his own mind, and I think it's more than just a guy who likes to play with guns.
Yeah, and I think somebody should tell him next time he goes out with a bodyguard, it shouldn't be somebody with a felony conviction, and the gun could be registered to somebody other than his girlfriend.
That's true. Yeah, it's the one thing, not to draw family into any of this stuff, but it is kind of interesting that that I believe her name is Samantha Rodriguez. We've heard that name a few different times because every time something comes up with her, somehow every time something comes up with him, somehow she's it's her gun, or it's she seems to be involved somehow. So you know, again, I hesitate to bring anybody's family into any situation, especially a fiance or a girlfriend, or I don't believe they're married yet. You know, mother of his child, but it is interesting that the firearms keep getting traced back to her.
Yeah. First of all, hey Scott, I wanted to tell everybody out there when we got Scott to come on this week. This was like Monday or Tuesday. I sent Scott an email and I said, Scott, you know, there's not a lot going on right now. Are you brave enough? Are you willing to come on the show and talk, even though there hasn't been any details? Well, then of course Scott knocked two out of the park in the last 2 days. And oh, by the way, Doc Rivers gets extended. So I appreciate the Celtics for helping out Scott's appearance today. And you know,
how quickly things change, huh? Just show
that. Know, yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. When you first brought me on, I figured we'd get we'd have tons of talk on whether the lottery's fixed or not, or some goofy subject like that, where you talk about it for a half hour and you don't really solve anything. But a number of things did wind up happening this week, so I guess it works out well for your program.
We appreciate that. Yes, thank you. Although we're not afraid from talking about goofy things either, too. but I wanted to go into your article yesterday that was run in the Herald, which I assume was probably part of the same interview you had with Danny. And, I was going to say the one piece that everybody seems to have focused on is this quote: "It's easy to find things that every coach does wrong." He added later, "X and O's are somewhat overrated in my mind. Critiques of substitution patterns and timeouts are overrated because, in my opinion, just about every NBA coach is on a fairly equal field in those regards. Those are the least of my concerns." Okay, well, if Danny Ainge wanted to ignite a small firestorm on the internet community, that was the way to do it. certainly, he's not buying into the convention that most fans and most fans around the team seem to believe about coaches in general, and maybe in some ways Doc's weaknesses. Did that comment strike you at all as maybe a bit odd? And I mean, it seems Ainge is the only guy, you know, in the personnel realm who hires and fires coaches who makes comments like these, and he seems to continually do it to back his own coach. But it's bucking the trend that I think we see from a lot of coaches around the league, or a lot of GMs around the league. Did that strike you when you heard that from him?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that was one of the reasons why that the article was set up the way it was. I knew that was probably going to be one that, whether you agreed with Danny or didn't agree with Danny, that was going to be one that was going to catch some people's attention. I knew it as soon as he said it. And when I was putting together the story later on that afternoon, you know, that's kind of where the, you know, whether you want to call it enlightened or not, because it clearly is a different way of thinking. Basketball, especially some playoff basketball, I'm sure a lot of people would argue that it does come down very strongly to X's and O's, and then that's not necessarily Doc Rivers' strong suit. It wasn't when he was involved in the playoff run, and it's been hard to tell since then because there's been so many other circumstances. There really hasn't been as much focus on his X's and O's coaching, but the fact that Danny looks at it that way, and the fact that he voiced that, I figured would stir up some discussion among the people who were discussing the Celtics at this point of the year.
The other thing that the second piece of this that I thought was also noteworthy, that which I think kind of leads to that, is, you know, how you ended it with this quote: "The issues keep coming up because of people don't pay as close attention or don't understand what goes on here every day." So Ainge said, "I'm not defending Doc because I have to. I'm defending Doc because of what I see him doing." We see him 82 games a year, unfortunately not more, making mistakes that you know, certainly seem easy from sitting on our Barca lounge. Lazy boys. Do you think that, you know, Doc Rivers, you know, even though Ainge is talking the good party line right now, do you think it's possible that we're in a situation where, I mean, it seems to me he's in a bit of a no-win situation, Doc Rivers. He comes back, and if they win, it's because of the players, and Ainge succeeds. If they fail, he gets fired. and he may get fired even if they do succeed anyway. Is it just me, or does it seem like that Doc is, he's going to have a very difficult time ever, A, winning over the fans in this town, or B, winning over the fact that even just to be, maybe number three or four on the list of complaints about how this team develops and is put together?
I didn't quite hear all of that question, but you're talking about how Doc will be perceived if he is able to turn it around a little bit?
Yeah, exactly.
I think he'll get credit if he's able to straighten it out. I think there's been cases before where people have had kind of negative feelings about coaches and the way they manage, and people have been willing to give them their due once they are able to right the track. I think with Doc, the only problem is it's a bit twofold. They felt, Doc was criticized by a lot of people when they won the division, and then they lost to Indiana in the first round of the playoff series. He had a lot of critics after that, and that was before he lost 10 additional games every year since. So he'll have kind of two hurdles to overcome. He'll have the hurdle of reversing the trend of going down and down and down and saying, okay, with my coaching, we were able to get back to the playoffs. But then once he gets back to the playoffs, that's when his game management will start to be critiqued. And you wonder, he was obviously a sufficient enough coach to get them back to the playoffs, but then you start to wonder whether he's the type of coach that can win playoff series, which I don't believe he's ever done. So he does have a couple of hurdles there, and he's confident in his ability to clear those hurdles, and the Celtics are confident enough in his ability that they've given him that contract extension, and good money at that. I mean, he's making, from the reports, Danny wouldn't get into contract numbers with me, but the reports that were in both the Globe and the Herald the day before suggest that he's getting paid very well for it.
Yeah, that it's funny, that playoff series at the time, I remember feeling like the Celtics really should make a little noise and get out of that first round, basically because of the injuries on Indiana. But, when you look at two of the top three players on the Celtics that season, they went on to be guys off the bench for Miami the last 2 years. So that really, that really says all you need to know about that. And then they ran into a great X's and O's coach in Rick Carlisle, and that's the end of the story there. It's too bad.
The thing with Rick Carlisle is he's so much. I had a bunch of people get in touch with me after Rick Carlisle was let go by Indiana, saying, "Well, does this put a wrinkle in the Doc Rivers extension? Because isn't Rick Carlisle the better coach?" And he's kind of the opposite of Doc. And maybe Danny, through some of his comments to me on Friday, kind of got to the basic of that. Rick Carlisle is considered a great X's and O's guy who drives his players nuts.
But look who he's had on his teams.
So managing a game, calling timeouts every other second. And, if you remember that, the playoff series, and even when he was with Detroit, it would be, the Celtics would get two baskets in a row and he would call a timeout to mess with momentum. And that, that drives some people crazy. Some people say that's great game management. Some people say, it drives them nuts. It obviously didn't work that well in Indiana this year. But it's kind of the two opposite guys. And I think through some of his comments, Danny is basically saying he's going with the bigger picture guy in Doc. Not necessarily if he was comparing him to Rick Carlisle, but if you look at it and you say, why didn't Celtics go for Rick Carlisle? You can look at some of those quotes that were in Saturday's both the Metro West Daily News and the Boston Herald and say, okay, well, this is, agree or disagree, this is where Danny's coming from.
I can't imagine it's all that hard to drive Ron Artest and Steven Jackson crazy, considering they're already six-fifths of the way there. But
yeah, but like Jermaine O'Neal, for instance, he complains constantly. And,
right, he's a whiner, yeah.
Yeah, so there's, there was talk there. Remember, Detroit went on and won the championship right after Rick Carlisle left there, and there was some talk that he was hardly missed in Detroit, that he drove some of those players are probably a lot more even-keeled than some of the characters he was dealing with in Indiana over the last couple of years. But, there weren't a lot of people who were that sad to see him go from Detroit, from what I heard, either, just because of his management style.
Yeah, I'd be interested to get some more detail on that at some point, too. Maybe I'll have to go digging around. But We got three questions from some emailers into the show anticipating your guest appearance. And just before we get to those, I just wanted to ask you, if you had to pick out one thing that you think holds Doc Rivers back from going deep into the playoffs, what is it? Is it the timeouts thing? Because I know the timeouts thing, you know, is a big concern for you. But is that number one on your list of, you know, if something was to set Doc back from getting far into the playoffs?
What do you mean by the timeouts thing?
Well, I mean, you know, just the curious timing of them, not calling them, calling them. I mean, you know, just if you were to pick out one thing about Doc Rivers' coaching ability that concerns you the most about the team's potential to, you know, really show up in the playoffs, what would be the top at the top of your list?
I don't know if this relates as much to the playoffs. I get concerned at the end of games and at the end of situations when the Celtics don't execute in a certain way. And Doc comes out afterwards and said, you know, we knew what play we wanted to run. It set up just how we thought it was going to set up. The play was there. They just didn't run it right. Well, at some point, why aren't they running it right? Is it because, you know, we went over it in practice and this is how it is it something that you are not communicating in them, or are they just not capable of running these plays, which, you know, aren't the most difficult plays? So I think the fact that that comes up often and often, and I worry you get into a playoff series, and there are a couple of close games, which they haven't been this year, but, you know, often there are in the playoffs, and you have a situation where they don't execute in crunch time, and in Doc's mind, at least what he says, is that everything was there, everybody knew what they were supposed to do, it happened exactly as I pictured it was going to happen, and we just didn't, you know, our players didn't do their part of it, and the fact that that comes up as often as it does, I think is concerning, and I wonder what will happen if they do get to the playoffs and that situation comes up. Maybe they will execute. They've been a little bit better at end-of-game situations this year, even throughout all the injuries, than they were last year when it seemed like they lost every single close game they were in, with the exception of a couple of big shots that Paul hit. So I guess that would be mine, how they don't execute in those one specific play. They'll do so many things right over the course of a 48-minute game, and then it comes to the end of the game, and they don't get it right, and you wonder at some point whose fault or who's to blame for that. One of the other ones is the other one with Doc, which I've never, and I understand his reasoning with it, but I don't always agree with, is the whole idea of not calling a timeout when you're in a one possession game in the final seconds. I know he'll always argue that you're better off running the play and not letting the defense set up, but the Celtics have rarely executed that correctly and won a game when they did not call a timeout at the end of the game. Usually it's even the last game of the year they won against Miami that, with, you know, the ball wound up going out of bounds and they wound up having a second to talk about it and actually did set up a play underneath the basket to Al Jefferson. It seems like whenever they've taken the missed free throw or the missed basket and run for the game-tying, game-winning shot off the fly, it hasn't worked out for him, and he seems pretty content to run it that way at all times.
Yep. Well, let's go to some of the questions from the emailers. I've got two from Fabio in Italy, so I'm going to ask one of his, and then I'm going to go to the other guy, and then come back to his second question. But the first question from Fabio is basically, after the Raptors proved that you can fill out a roster with complementary players from Europe, what do you think Ainge will do with the mid-level exception this summer, and do you see him looking overseas to bring in sort of a veteran talent?
I don't know how that's going to work over the summer. Danny Ainge, for all that, one thing that I think is kind of interesting is that for all the talk of Danny Ainge going over to Europe, and I don't know whether his association with Phoenix or Chris Wallace's association with overseas, is this idea that the Celtics do this extensive scouting in Europe and in the Far East, much more so than other teams do. Yet the Celtics generally draft players who either are or were high school phenoms. They're high school all-star circuit type players, the players that the Celtics have been bringing in the past few years. Rajon Rondo, Sebastian Telfair, Al Jefferson, Joel Green. So they're not nearly as worldly as you would think they were based on kind of the image you have of them. I don't know whether they bring in a European player. I don't know all the. I'm not one of those people who knows all the names of the the veterans in Europe. I know there are some that are available in this year's draft. We'll have to see. I mean, they're still going to have a, barring a trade, they're still going to have a fairly full roster. They're going to get probably two more draft picks, the top pick and also that high pick in the second round, which is a considered kind of a valuable pick because you don't have to guarantee the contracts. You kind of bring in a guy who you probably have rated in the first round anyways, but you don't have to, but it's not first round terms, it's financial terms that are more beneficial to the club. So they're going to add two more guys to the mix they already have. So they're going to have a pretty full roster. I'm not sure whether they'd be looking to bring in a mid-level guy or not. And the Celtics are still not that attractive for mid-level guys to come to just because, you know, they're not a lot of the mid-level guys who are really good deals are guys who come in at less money than they could make someplace else. You know, it's almost like a Michael Finley type. And they say, okay, because I believe in this situation, I'll come in at a little bit less money. The Celtics aren't in a position where they're that attractive to those people yet.
Well, you know, let me jump in just quickly on Fabio Andrele, who is our friend from Italy. He's a former player, coach, and a GM in various Italian leagues. He's been saying for a long time that there was veteran talent out there, probably at least 3 or 4 years. He had been touting Garbajosa and some others. And he says that the Celtics are noticeably absent from overseas and Euro scouting. He says lots of other teams have people there on a permanent or semi-permanent basis, and the Celtics never have. So, you know, your supposition seems to be confirmed.
And since
I mean, I know that again, Chris Wallace is traveling all over the world, but, you know, whether there's that constant presence over there or not, I guess, you know, from this, that there's not as much as maybe you would have thought. I know that Chris Wallace does a lot of, you know, there's also this idea with Chris Wallace that he's always in Europe when, in fact, he's usually in college gym someplace. He does a lot of American scouting. And, you know, the fact that they've never taken any of these guys, or at least they've never taken them to the point where they've been a factor on the roster, suggests that they're not as inclined to do it as some of the other teams in the NBA, San Antonio, Toronto, Phoenix being some of the...
Yeah, and, you know, since you mentioned the roster crunch, I am going to go to a second question just because it falls right into what you're talking about. You know, Ainge recently said that they'll pick a player in this draft that's 6'7 or 6'8 or taller. And, you know, Fabio's basically taking that to mean that they're going to look at somebody who can play the power forward or center position. And so he says, if so, what of Leon Poe, considering the roster crunch? Do you think Leon Poe's time is limited?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a couple people asked me about that at the end of the season. Do you think Leon will be back? I know they definitely like him, but, you know, he does a lot of it has to do with who they draft. I mean, if they come out of the draft with, you know, just to name names, but Al Horford and Nick Fizikas in the second round, well, how many of those guys are you really going to have room for in the team? So I think that they like Leon. They would like to find a spot for Leon. But if their opportunity, if the best players they see out there in the draft are play that position, then it would be hard for Leon to get to get a fairer shake.
Yeah, and the final question that we got from emails is from Lance G. He always hits us up with a question every week, and this one is kind of insightful. I don't know if you can really get a handle on this, but it might, you know, spawn an interesting response anyway. It says, he asks, what percentage of the Boston media feel that they get better stories when the team is falling apart rather than when the team is successful and winning games?
That's kind of interesting to figure out. I don't know that it's necessarily better stories. It's just different. I mean, you have, you know, a Red Sox, you obviously have less people covering the Celtics, and Justin noticed that, or I don't know what his experience is with the other teams, but it is a little bit different in there than it would be in the Celtics. I mean, than it would be in a Red Sox or a Patriots locker room. I don't think that, you know, reporters don't, contrary to what some people believe, reporters don't necessarily go out looking to report on bad news because it makes for good copy. You know, reporters want compelling news. They want news that people will be interested in, and that can come in a variety of forms. Obviously, if a team is winning, you know, I've always said that it's in my best interest for the Celtics to do well because there's more interest in them. and there'd be more interest in what we write about them than what we talk about them. So I don't know that people look for falling apart situations. I think reporters don't want to kind of have their head in the sand and ignore potentially dangerous situations, whereas some of the public, I think, would say, well, why do you have to report on that? Why can't you just report on what happens on the field and the good stuff? Because reporters don't want to be taken for a ride. They want to be the ones who, if there is a problem on the horizon, they want to be aware of that and be able to point that out to people to kind of explain things ahead of time rather than wait for everything to fall apart. But I don't think that reporters go out saying, well, you know, it'd be really good if they, you know, lost 20 games in a row this year and Paul Pierce demands a trade and this happens and that happens because that'll make for great copy. Because, you know, that might, I don't know, it might make for an interesting story or scoop for a day, but then, you know, you have to deal with the aftermath, too, in a team that's in a worse-off situation, and your hope is that people will follow the team through your reporting, you know, each day and each week, you know, depending on how often you write and post your columns, you know, depending on what your situation is and where you're reporting.
Scott, I want to go back to your article you had raised with Danny, the issue of Paul having complained loudly and often about the need to trade for veterans. And Danny had answered that the reason Paul is still with us and still believes in us is because I do talk to Paul. I wouldn't do a trade because Paul didn't want me to if I thought it was the best interest of the franchise. What I do want to get out of Paul is a feel of where he thinks our young players are. In almost every case, we see eye to eye. He likes our young players more and would never do those deals to get that veteran player. And yet he wants veteran players. Now, do you think, is that a little disingenuous of Danny? Do you think that is 100% accurate? Wasn't Paul lobbying to get Allen Iverson here, for instance, last summer?
Was Paul lobbying to get out of Boston last summer?
No, to get Iverson here in that
trade. Oh, to get Iverson? Yeah, I mean, I think his kind of point is, and that was, you know, taken from, a long, long conversation I had with Danny that I could include every word that he said. But basically, the background of that was, you know, when veteran players come along, Paul is intrigued by adding them to the Celtics. But I think what he was getting at without saying it was, okay, would you like Allen Iverson, Paul? And Paul says yes. And then you say, okay, it's going to cost us Gerald Green, Al Jefferson, and Delonte West. Do you still want Allen Iverson, Paul? And then he tends to say, well, no, not if that's going to be the cost. And that's kind of, I think that's basically what he's getting at, is that, you know, everybody wants to bring in veteran players, but when you say, okay, we bring in a veteran player and it will cost us, you know, Al Jefferson or Rajon Rondo, do you still want that veteran player? Well, then suddenly the deal doesn't seem to be isn't viewed as favorable by the general public, and in this case, I guess the same goes for the feeling that he says that he gets from Paul.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting, and it's been an undercurrent through the season. I think you probably remember Jackie McMullen's article, which came out a month and a half ago, you know, where Paul, you know, kind of said, you know, I'm a veteran all-star, but I'm not making the all-star team anymore because the team is losing and I'm not getting the props around the league. I'm not on ESPN highlight anymore. You know, it's hard to tell how deep that is. And as your article, you know, did note that Danny, you know, really tried to defuse that pretty much completely by saying that Paul is in on discussions and that every move that the Celtics were going to make was run by Paul and discussed with Paul, and that Paul agreed that it wasn't worth the price. And yet, you know, on the other hand, we hear that they were chasing Allen Iverson right down to the last minute.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess I agree. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't know how else to put it other than the feeling that I got from my conversation with Danny was that they try to keep Paul into the loop. I mean, I think they're cognizant of Paul's antsiness getting up near his 30th birthday now and not necessarily seeing the clear light here. But I think what he was trying to point at was that, you know, the trades in the NBA are not easy to make. Everybody, so many people say, well, if you don't get the top two pick, you just have to trade it for a veteran, or you got to just trade some of these young guys for veterans. It's very hard to work that out. I think there are certain situations where the Celtics, and Danny said he's been involved in trade talks. He's, you know, you don't know exactly what those trade talks were. Maybe they were at some level with Iverson. There were others over the summer that the names tossed about that maybe at some level he was involved in. But, you know, if it becomes, okay, we're going to trade, and again, I'm just throwing out hypothetical names, but, you know, Gerald Green for this guy, okay, we'll do it. But the other team says, well, we also want a draft pick, and we also want, you know, Ryan Gomes and this and that. And then suddenly it becomes, you know, how much do you give up just to trade youth for veterans when you don't want a situation where, you know, as he said, there are players that are 28 years old that he knows are better than his players now, but a year down the road, when your young guy is you know, a legitimate NBA starter, maybe, you know, getting some all-star consideration, and then you're paying a veteran guy, and don't forget, veteran guys pay a lot of money, you're getting paid a veteran, you're paying a veteran $11 million to be a 30-year-old guy who, you know, doesn't even start for you anymore, then you look back and regret those trades. And to take it back to Paul, I think his point is that, again, Paul wants veterans, Paul wants more experience, Paul wants better players, but when the actual deals that are available are mentioned to Paul, you know, even he agrees that they're not getting enough value for their young guys. And when it comes to practically, okay, do we make conceptually? Yeah, you would be willing to trade youth for experience, but when it comes down to the actual, this is what the potential trade is. Then, according to Danny, anyways, Paul sees that a lot of these trades would not ultimately be advantageous to the Celtics.
I thought that was a very important point because, you know, we keep hearing this over and over and over again. It's, excuse me, from my perspective, from here, it's getting tiring to hear, well, will Paul like it? Well, you know, I'm getting to get fed up with that. So I'm glad to hear that you were able to get Danny to address that. Going along that same track and talking about the young guys, there was a really interesting quote that we talked about before you came on. In the story about the 97 draft, and specifically some things that I thought, and I think Jug mentioned that he thought was a little bit critical of Patino. And I mean, while he says that, you know, you don't trade away Joe Johnson, you don't do some of the things that Rick Pitino did, he typically didn't call him out by name. I thought that was, you know, something he never had done. But the comment in here that he gave to you was about how the team could have drafted Chauncey Billups and Tracy McGrady, and trying to equate that to this year's draft. Do you buy that? Because I sure don't. I mean, I think that there's certainly some guys that will do well, but I find it very difficult to believe that anyone could match what Kevin Durant or Greg Oden could do with, you know, as they project to be.
I agree with you. I think what, and you know, some will call this spin, but what Danny and Chris Wallace have said over the past couple of weeks when they've done interviews with me and other people is that, you know, there will be other players in this draft besides those two. Now, to try to figure out which one it's going to be is the hard part, but, you know, that's their job, is to figure out which one's going to be, to try to figure out which one is Tracy McGrady and which one is Ron Mercer. But I believe that they think that, you know, of that next group, one or two of them is going to turn out to be an all-star player, and they just have to be able to figure out. It becomes harder if you don't have one of the top two picks, but that it's not, you know, you're not drafting from a bunch of scrubs at number three or four. There is the potential out there to get a very good to great player. You just have to be able to identify him, bring him in here, and stay true to your convictions that he is your guy. And, you know, back in 97, and I was honestly a little bit surprised that he mentioned Rick Pitino by name, but once he did, I went with it. You know, they did get that guy in Chauncey Billups. I mean, they got the second or third best player in the draft, and if you listen to Danny, and he's probably talked to other people who were involved in the Celtics at the time, they could have had the next two best players at the draft, two all-stars, two MVP candidates, and because one, lack of patience with Chauncey Billups, and two, lack of conviction, I guess, with Tracy McGrady, they didn't wind up getting the fruits of either of them, But I think his point is that, you know, they lost out on Tim Duncan that year. They still could have gotten two spectacular players. And, you know, maybe equating it to this year, maybe there's that opportunity. Now, don't ask me who those two players are because, you know, I have guys of that next tier that I like, but I'm not saying I know which one's going to be the Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh of this year, you know, compared to the Carmelo Anthony and LeBron, or in the same situation, who's going to be the Tracy McGrady, Chauncey Billups, if you miss out on Tim Duncan.
Or if we miss out on Greg Oden and Kevin Durant, who's going to be the Robert Swift for Danny Ainge's smokescreen? I know that gets a lot of people talk about that a lot, and I'm starting to wonder if Danny isn't giving too much praise to Yi Yan Lian. I think that's how you pronounce it, because I see him starting to dole out some effusive praise, and we're going to get to some audio clips from WEEI later in the show, but Danny had a lot of nice things to say about Yi and having, you know, Yi having a lot of veteran-type experience and being more NBA-ready than a lot of the college players here in America.
Yeah, you know, I don't claim to be an expert on Yi. I don't really know anything about him other than he's a big guy who likes to play away from the basket, but that is the everything that I know about him is probably everything that you guys know about him just from stuff you read from internet sources of people who have seen him. I can't make a qualified judgment on whether Yi is better than Brandon Wright or Al Horford or Brewer is probably a guy that I would think he might be referring to as a guy who would make more of an impact more quickly. Jeff Green, he's spoken very highly of Jeff Green.
Another smokescreen. These are the guys I think that are just perfect smokescreens. I mean, I think Jeff's a good player, but I don't think they're really looking at a guy who's, you know, a Ryan Gomes type of, you know, 3/4, even if they do project him out to be a better player than Ryan Gomes. I can't imagine they want another in-betweener guy. But maybe, but at the same time, you know, trading the pick is always an option too. So they want to make those. Yeah, if they don't get one of the top two picks, they want to make 3-5 sound absolutely like, you know, the best steak you ever had. And that, you know, that they're going to be selling that right up until May 22nd. And if they get one of the top two picks, they're not going to care anymore. And, you know, that you'll all that talk about those players, obviously it'll end because it won't be relevant to what they're going to be doing. So in the meantime, you know, I think he's playing the great game.
Yeah, throughout this whole thing, I mean, Danny and Chris Wallace have both acknowledged that, listen, we'd rather have one of the top two picks and that those guys are they've all but admitted that those are the two. There's no situation where it's like, well, everybody thinks Oden and Durant are the top two guys, but we think it's Hibbert and Joakim Noah. I mean, I don't think there's anything like that. They acknowledge that they'd be better off with one or two. I think what they're saying is we can't go in with the idea that all is lost if we wind up at 3, 4, or 5. We still have to be able to function. There's going to be a good player out there to be drafted in that spot. We have to either be able to pick him or we have to be able to swing a trade where we can get a value for that spot. I think, you know, you don't see, there were a lot of trades last year during the draft, but, you know, it's not that easy to just trade these players, and you don't know what teams are going to give you. You know, at the end, it's still the third or fourth overall in the pick. You don't know what pick in the draft. You don't know what other teams are going to be offering for this pick. You can't treat it as suddenly, because it's not one of the top two picks, it just becomes a throw-in selection. You have to value it more than that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
More than they valued the number 7 pick last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I agree with that, and I think there are a number of players. I don't think Danny's, you know, just blowing smoke when he says there's a number of good players after those top two and that they're obviously a tier below Oden and Durant. But I just think right now it's a lot of posturing, and I'm not gonna take everything Danny Ainge says right now for face value. And he's talking an awful lot. So, you know, that's another sign for me to kind of take a step back and say, okay, not everything that's being put out right now is necessarily, you know, gospel behind the closed doors of the Celtics organization. I wanted to get to, we got another, we got a post on the blog tonight here, just as the show is about to start, from Jerry. And he wrote in to you. He says, "Hi, Scott. I read your piece on Ainge today in the Metro West paper. I was greatly impressed by Ainge's responses and really feel that the organization is quite lucky to have him as a GM. I want to ask you the following. He's got two questions. I'm going to hit up the first one. He says, how do you feel about Ainge's interview? Do you feel like he's too cautious, a little frightened to make a mistake, and his hesitancy leading us into a larger abyss? Do you get the sense that Dan, I think what he's saying is, do you get the sense that Danny's a little tentative?
Tentative during an interview or tentative in general?
I think he means during the interview. He says, how do you feel about the interview? Like when you come out of the interview, do you feel like Danny's, you know, kind of, you know, being tentative to share too much information, or do you feel like, you know, he's being very proactive and he's right in it?
To be honest, I thought he was exceptionally forthcoming in you know, giving me 45 minutes or whatever to talk about different subjects. Some may contend that Danny tends to be a little bit too forthcoming a lot of times and sharing his opinions on things. I mean, you know, he could have just said, you know, we thought we were moving in the right, you know, injury. Doc, for instance, you know, he talks about the X's and O's thing. Well, that kind of opens him up for criticism when he says stuff like that. He could be more cautious and say, you know, we had a lot of injuries this season. We'd like to give Doc Rivers a chance with a healthy team. Have that be the end of it, and people can take that for what they will. Throughout his time that I've dealt with him, he's usually taken the time to try to discuss his thinking on things, and he took more time than he ever has before with me on Friday to discuss his thinking, and I thought that he was forthcoming. Now, you know, some people always say, well, it's just spin, it's just posturing. You know, that's up to you to decide. I mean, but Danny said so much over the course of the interview that basically I just wanted to try to put his thoughts out there and without too much of my own opinion in it this week. Just kind of, you know, this is what the subjects we touched on, this is what his responses are, and you can kind of, people can kind of decide, you know, what they think and what they take out of each one of those responses.
Yeah, I think you said a lot of valuable things, and I think you're right. He was forthcoming. I'm actually thinking more of the WEEI interview when he's going into depth about some of the prospects that are in the draft. That's the stuff. I think there's posturing regarding the draft.
All last year he was talking about how much he loved all these draft players, and then they wound up trading the pick. And, of course, later on in the night they wound up getting back into the draft to take Rondo, which is probably the guy that he liked the best anyways. He's not going to come out. I mean, nobody would expect him to come out now and say, well, if we get the number three pick, we're taking Brandon Wright. I mean, then he would be more criticized for being too truthful. I mean, we live in the Theo Epstein, Bill Belichick town now, where you know everything seems to be subterfuge all the time. So I think compared to them, you get a lot of truth out of Danny's mouth. Not that I don't want to be down on Theo or Bill Belichick. I don't deal with them, but just from talking to people who do, we deal with them, and just the general perception of how they share information now.
Well, the Red Sox have
you get a lot more out of Danny than you get out of some sports organizations.
Well, right, the Red Sox have their own own channel to control the propaganda as well as they want to. But I want to get to Jerry's second question then, because you kind of touched upon Doc there, and Jerry says, "Who are all these anti-Doc Rivers bloggers and why?" I'm sure he got an extension, but it's a weak one, and it's not like Wick can't part company with him. What do we care about Wick's $5 million? He does deserve another crack at it. There aren't many people who are in that boat. I'm in that boat. I said it just before you came on the show when we were kind of priming the topic about Doc's extension. I happen to agree with Jerry. I don't really care about the $5 million. It's the organization and Wick's money that's being spent. If things don't work out with Doc, I'm pretty confident that they'll have to make a move this coming season, because they're going to be worried about ticket sales at that point if Doc's not doing well. What's your take on that? Do you feel like there's an impact if they do spend an extra $5 million? I mean, are people really, should they be concerned about, you know, ticket prices going up or concessions just because they, you know, wind up eating $5 million on a Doc Rivers contract extension if things don't work out?
I wouldn't think that they're going to raise the price of beer 25 cents because they have to pay two coaches at once. This management group paid a lot for the team. They don't want to. I don't think they would throw another $5 million at Doc Rivers just as kind of a public show of support and still go into the idea that we might be firing him in the next couple of months. That's a lot of money. So they clearly think that he has a chance to turn it around. you're right. The extension, and this was kind of the extension. The idea of this extension was the one that we kind of bantied about all throughout the spring. I mean, I remember I had a column towards the end of the spring where it basically ended, you know, if Doc's willing to stick for the one-year extension at the same rate, then the bet is that it'll get done. And that's exactly what they wound up giving him. So I don't think it's not a long-term extension where where they would take a major financial hit, but it's enough of a extension where, you know, they would like him to coach out the rest of that contract. I'm sure they don't want to be paying him $5 million for 1 year and have to bring in another coach at $4 or $5 million, and you have $10 million worth of coaches. I think they would do it if they saw that as something they had to do, but I don't think they. I think it would be a not something they would enjoy doing.
Yeah, it's a little disheartening for me. $5 million is $5 million, and I wonder whether this means that Danny has tied his job to Doc's and whether ownership would then let them both go at the end of next season, letting the team fall if it breaks badly, rather than replacing Doc early next season. But while we're talking about money, Scott, and I guess we're about ready to wrap, but I got one more question for you. You brought up to Danny the fact that this summer Jefferson, West, Tony Allen are at the final year of their rookie deal where they can be extended, and Ryan Gomes is entering his final year as well. Do you think that there's any chance that this team will try to trade Ratliff's expiring contract, or do you think the financial situation is just going to be too tight now?
I think that they would definitely look into trading his contract. The question is whether they would trade his contract in a situation where you're bringing somebody back who is making that much money, but not for 1 year, but for 4 or 5 years. And then you look at, you know, you trade Ratliff salary cap wise, you bring the player back making $12 million, say Blake LaFrance. Not that they would bring back Blake LaFrance, but you know, that type of, you're bringing back that type of contract, then you have to think about, okay, now we're carrying that player at $12 million for another 3 or 4 years, and that starts to overlap with the money that we would, if they keep them, that we would have to pay Delonte West and Al Jefferson. Al Jefferson would probably be the highest salary of that crew right now by a pretty good margin. But then you start to get into luxury cap, luxury spending issues and all that stuff. So I could see them trading Ratliff's contract, but I don't know that it's going to, that they would use that in a deal to bring in an Iverson contract where suddenly, you know, it's a $20 million player for the next 3 or 4 years, because then you do run into some big-time money problems with all the rookies starting to come up and starting to get raises. You know, one thing about having all these rookies is they don't get paid that much. But eventually you do have to pay them. You didn't have to pay Kendrick Perkins that much. You're going to have to pay Al Jefferson more.
Yeah, that's my take, too. And I think, you know, the real appeal of an expiring contract like that is that you take a star player from some other team who wants to turn around and rebuild, and that star player would help your team a lot, but it would be a 3 or 4 year deal that you're taking. I don't think there's anybody that would want Theo Ratliff in any kind of a straight up deal.
One of the things that comes up with the old idea of trades, and it kind of goes back to what I was talking to Danny about a little, and again, when people talk about the need to make trades, you know, you look at the trades that are made in the NBA. I mean, how many guys that were traded in the NBA over the last year, you know, would you be that interested in, you know, given what you would have to pay them? And, you know, everybody that gets traded in the NBA generally either has a very high price tag or has some injury history or has some off-court issues or whatever, or is going to be a free agent very soon. So it's the ability to get the right player in a trade in the NBA is not as readily available as I think a lot of people think it is.
Well, there's a lot of names out there, but I think just because nobody will take Zerbiak, he's got 2 years left and bad legs, and Ratliff, we've just expressed the financial considerations, I don't think it's realistic that the Celtics can be in the market for somebody like a Gasol or a Jermaine O'Neal, or any of the other big money players that are out there, if Paul Pierce or anybody else is hoping,
again,
you know, that we're going to get them.
Not unless they're willing to not only trade the contract, the Theo Wally type money contract, but also include some of those younger players who, so then you wouldn't have to give the young players the contract extensions because they wouldn't be here anymore. You wouldn't have to worry about paying Delonte West $5 million in extension because he would be included in that original deal. And again, it comes back to the fact that, well, you're adding somebody to the mix, but you want to add them to some of those younger players you have, not substitute them for some of those younger players you have.
So it goes. Anyway, okay. It's been very entertaining, Scott, and as always, we really enjoyed having you, and thank you very much for coming on. Are you going to Vegas this summer, by the way?
I am planning on heading down. I wasn't sure about it, but it looks like I won't be down there for the whole time. I stayed there for about 9 days last summer, and it 120 degrees for 9 days gets to be a little bit much, but I think I'm going down. I believe it's I don't know exactly what their schedule is. I know the summer league runs from the 6th to the 15th. I think I'm going to be there somewhere in the vicinity of the 8th or the 9th through the 14th. So for a good chunk of it, but not for the entire thing.
Well, we hope you'll share some of your experiences and observations from Vegas with us, Scott, if we don't have you on before.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Yes, thank you, Scott. As always, sticking around for about an hour of your time, so that's excellent. I know that the people who listen to our show, big fan of your commentary, and just really appreciate you taking the extra time and the extra mile coming on. That's great. Fantastic.
Okay, well, as always, thank you guys for your support.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Well, I got to tell you, Scott's been... He earns the support because he follows his team in the off season like nobody's business, and it's good stuff. So we really enjoy having him on, and like I said, when we introduced him, he's been on since the beginning basically, and been providing great insights ever since then. We're going to be heading to break here in a little bit, but I think we're going to use this time to talk a little bit about. Our sponsors that we have now, Allen Auction and Garber Family Dentistry, just to say thank you so much to them for their support. And just to throw out some information that we are looking for more sponsors, especially for our draft night show. And we are going to be broadcasting all night, basically until the calls stop. I mean, we're doing this thing, and we'll be on just before the draft to take your calls. And it's probably the biggest night of the year, even when you're not on the top of the lottery. But obviously, the Celtics, going to be making. Going to be having the attention focused squarely on them. And so, if you're interested in sponsoring just, this one show or interested in getting some information about sponsoring the show into next season, give us a call. And again, thanks. If you do go see our current sponsors, if you go to any of the auctions that Allen Auction puts on, or if you go to Garber Family Dentistry, I just want to encourage you to let them know, that you heard the advertisement on the show and et cetera. Even if you were already a patient at the practice or already done business with Allen Auction, just let them know because it helps support us and lets them know that, obviously their sponsorship is, generating business.
Tell them Jughead sent you.
Yeah, tell them Jughead sent you. Tell them Jughead went on a 3-minute appeal to mention our show. And by the way, if you have other Celtics friends, make sure they know about the show as well. Let the people know on your message boards and et cetera, because all that support and the sponsor support is what helps us put this show on, and it's fun for us and we enjoy doing it. So. Well, guys, how do we segue from that? I guess it's probably just time to go to a break. We're taking your calls. You can give us a call on the toll-free line, 866-751-9649. We're also going to keep an eye on what's going on in the pit. Busy night in the pit. I'm loving it. So, give us a call. Somebody get in line, and we'll start taking your calls when we come back. We've got a couple of clips of Danny Ainge on WEEI, as well as a couple of emails. John from Montana checking in after last week's discussion and debate. Probably the best part of the show last week spawned from an email. He's got some responses to the show. And we also have a new emailer that is calling out the Duke and I about Doc Rivers. So we'll get to that right when we come back from the break. And, yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. Right here on Celtic Stuff Live. We'll be right back.
Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see. And digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
About a 1.5 million. 1-1, 1-1, go ahead. Thank you. 1-1 now, 50 out of the bid. 1-1 now, 50 last call. Sold 1,000,001. Thank you. Bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company, specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
We're back. Toll-free number is 866-751-9649. Get in your call. I can't believe the phone line hasn't already picked up with people who want to talk about Doc Rivers and chime in on their thoughts on the extension. Having said that, I think we're going to go to our emailer. It's E. Anthony Monet. And he's going to call John and I out in this email. He titles it Doc Doc Goose. He says, well, Jug and Duke, the news just came through, and your boy Doc Rivers is back. Uncle Wick just couldn't wait for May 22nd to come, you know, when we actually will have an idea about where the direction of this team is headed. Just remember, guys, when Doc benches Durant for looking at him funny in the locker room, the record shows, let the record show, that this is what you two ask for. And when Mr. Rivers goes small with Odin on the bench, just remember that we told you so. That's E. Anthony Monet, and he's the one requesting the Roots song earlier. But John, what do you think? Are you scared? Are you sweating it? Are you worried? Because I mean,
I'm not worried. I'm not. The email was a work of art, Mr. Monet. Sorry, bad joke.
Yeah, I knew you had to go there.
No, you know, there's a risk. There's a risk with everything. I mean, there's a risk that you bring in Carlisle and he aggravates the young players so much that they all want to get out of here and they don't want to re-sign Jefferson. I mean, there's a lot here. I mean, the coach, you know, Doc Rivers is not the end-all be-all, but we know sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. And I think that, to me, that's kind of what I look at with this whole Doc Rivers thing is he's not perfect, no doubt. There's no question about that. He's got more question marks than anything I know. But look, here's the thing. What can you do? I mean, you cut the guy loose, and then what do you end up with? You end up with, you know, I think that's the debate you have. Can you improve, you know, what you have? You're going to be deficient in some other area. Is that worth it for this team? I say right now, no. I think right now that maybe that the style of coach Doc Rivers is, that doesn't mean he's the only guy who can do that, but the style that Doc does is reasonable and good for what this team needs right now. Now ask me in November and December, and if they cut him loose, then fine. But you know, I think it's a little bit overwrought, the whole Doc Rivers thing, but you know, certainly welcome to disagree with me, folks. I know you will.
I'll tell you what, if it was a 2-year extension, I probably would have a lot more to say negative about the deal, but a 1-year extension just doesn't have my undies in a bunch.
I'm going to jump in here on the distaff side, since the people in the pit can't argue against you directly,
but they can call the toll free number.
Well, we hope they will, but
I see them there.
This could cost us a whole next season, as opposed to riding the ship over the summer, getting somebody in here who really knows what they're doing. It's not that long ago when we had a full roster, and we were wondering what the hell was Doc doing? What was the rotation? Why wasn't he playing this guy? Why was he starting Ratliff and Gomes in the front court? Why was Rondo on the bench? We were saying that all the young kids have got their heads between their legs, that they're all getting discouraged, confused. They don't know what they're doing. Doc is shouting at them, pulling them for every little thing. And all of a sudden, Doc is a big hero for developing the youth because he was down to a 7 or 8 man roster in the last month. I mean, you guys, I think you have a short memory, and I honestly don't think Doc knows what the hell he's doing as a coach. I think that really he's in his own world at times, and it's the proof is in the pudding. And Scott was saying the last play of the game, we always flub it up. Well, it was the last 3 to 5 minutes of most games where we come into the fourth quarter with leads and just fritter them away. How many games did we blow in the last 3 years down the stretch? And that's got to be coaching. It's just got to be. And I don't see anything about his coaching that gives me any confidence, and as I'll repeat again, my big fear is that we've lost another year.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Yeah, it's possible. It's certainly possible. Go ahead, John, because you didn't really...
I was just gonna reiterate what you said, basically. I don't see that happening. I don't think if... The only way that they really lose on this extension is if Doc Rivers goes into the playoffs and then lays another egg. You know what I mean? Where he does just good enough during the season to give, the fans some hope, but then has, kind of a real tragic loss in the first round like it was 3 years ago against Indiana. If that happens again, then the team loses a little bit because it's a tough decision and it gives the Celtics maybe, some wiggle room as far as PR is concerned to, keep Doc one more season. But I have to say, if they have an unceremonious exit in 4 or 5 games in the first round of the playoffs next season, Doc Rivers is most certainly going into, the following season as a lame duck coach because, at that point, once this team is healthy and headed into the playoffs, I think you get one and done, basically. I mean, you have to get to the third, you have to get to the conference finals, I think. Once you're in there, you really need to you need to have a good showing in the playoffs to keep your job because the talent is on this team. And, you got to get in there and you got to get further than you have before. John, what were you going to say? Do you have any follow-up to that? Do you agree or do you think Doc Rivers gets in there and he goes to the second round? Is that good enough? A first-round win, is that progress? Does that say, Doc doesn't go lame duck again the following year or?
I think if you win 24 games, you get to the second round of the playoffs. That's darn good. I mean, people are right now ready to. There are more people slapping, Sam Mitchell on the back than just as soon stab a knife in it a year ago.
I got to tell you though, actually, that's traditional media. Everybody I talk to. That's up in Toronto. I've talked to a number of people, and they still don't think Sam Mitchell is a good coach. They think that the GM pulled it together with going to get Garbajosa and Parker and,
You're missing my point, though.
Oh, sorry.
You're missing my point. I'm talking about a year ago, though.
Right.
My point I'm trying to make is that, a year changes a lot of things, okay? Now, the perception, I agree with what you're saying. Sure. And I think that's why my question to Scott was what it was. Is there any way that Doc Rivers can salvage his public persona? I don't think he can. I think he's forever going to be known as the guy who ran his team to a 24 win program. And that's going to be Doc Rivers. In Celtics fans' minds, unless he wins a championship, it's either or. And I don't know that that's necessarily fair. Given what he has been handed. I mean, in some ways, I agree with Peter May in saying that, how can you, judge Doc Rivers solely on the basis of that when, what he's been given is basically 11 players who are under the age of 23. I mean, that's pretty tough to work with.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. And whether you're, Red Auerbach or whether you're Greg Popovich or Phil Jackson or You know, you name any of the greatest coaches out there, they're going to go out there. Those kids are going to make mistakes at the end of ball games, and there's that's just the way it is. At the same time, I can understand what he's saying. You need to see improvement. You need to see end of games that they get better and better and better. But this team never had a consistent lineup, and that's less due to him and more due to what was going on in the trainer's room and in the doctor's office.
Well, some people said that was an issue before the injuries, though. Even the year before, wasn't that Doc's biggest criticism was not settling on a.
Yeah, but what I'm saying though is like that was you know, year two of Al Jefferson. That's year two of Tony Allen. Year two of Delonte West. I mean, the only player of that group that played consistently last year was Delonte.
Well, and I think that's a fair counter argument. Absolutely. I mean, I'm on board with you there.
Yeah, on the other hand, last year in the summertime or maybe around this time, we were all speculating on how far Doc would go into the season if the team started out badly. And I think I was talking about Christmas, and you guys maybe said, well, you'd give him until the trading deadline.
Yep.
What has he shown in 3 years that would make you, an extension is a reward. It's one thing to say, well, the guy lucked out and he's had all these injuries and he had a bunch of young players and so, we can't fire him over that. But we're not talking about right now firing him. We're talking about giving him an extension, and that you'd think would be a reward for something. Well, what the heck is it that he's being rewarded for?
Well, I think he's just getting. I think you're right. He's just getting a break. He's getting cut a break because of the injuries. We've got a caller. Let's see what they've got to sound off on Doc Rivers. Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live. You're on the air.
Hello, hello. It's Q from Kansas. How are you doing?
Excellent,
hey,
Q. How are you?
Haven't called in for a while and want to see how you guys were doing.
Well,
I don't know.
We're sitting on eggshells, Q. We're waiting for that ping pong ball extravaganza on the 22nd. That's really next big piece.
To me, that overshadows what they do with what they do or don't do with Doc Rivers, giving them an extension for what, 1 year.
Yeah, that shoe has dropped. I guess he's got some incentives too. There's a team option and a coach option in the third year. And in 08, if he makes some noise in the playoffs, he gets some bonuses and incentives are there. But that shoe has dropped, we're talking about it. But going forward, really, it's I don't want to say it's Odin or bust, but as we talked with Scott and everybody pretty much agrees that they won't. The likelihood of a big trade is very small, and unless there's an Odin in our future, I'm not sure what propels the Celtics into the second round of the playoffs next year. What do you see, Q?
Well, if they take their pick, and if it's not Odin or Durant, then if everybody stays healthy, then yeah, I think the Celtics should make the playoffs, but they'll probably be one and done. Maybe get to the second round. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Or they could come from nowhere like Golden State has. They make
not the without a point guard like Golden State has. I mean,
and
I'm going to go back.
Coach like Golden State has Don Nelson.
I mean, Rondo isn't as good as Baron Davis.
No, he's not, and he has a ways to go.
He could be in 5 or 6 years though.
Well, right, but if we're talking about getting it done in the next 2 years, they're not going to do a goal. They're not going to pull a Golden State without Chauncey Billups here, and maybe Mike Bibby, depending on how the draft goes.
Well, I don't know. An interesting thought I had is if Billups were truly available for the Celtics, it'd be worth investing Paul Pierce. Send Paul Pierce to Detroit for Chauncey Billups. I don't think Detroit would do that though.
Well, they'd have a problem with, finding a place for. They wouldn't have a point guard, and then they would have a log jam at small forward and shooting guard. Basically, they'd have three guys worthy of starting. So it just, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to them. I mean, I don't know. I think, if Chauncey Billups is to be had, then it's basically because Chauncey has, put Detroit into the position of forcing a trade, you know, a sign-in right. trade. I mean, that's the only way that winds up happening. And we would have to give up some big-time prospects. There's no doubt about it. Gerald Green is, you know, as good as gone. And, you might have to give some more, of your higher-tier prospects, not named Al Jefferson, too. So,
you think Gerald Green will be moved this summer?
If they make a trade for a veteran, if they decide that there's a deal out there that makes sense for them, Gerald Green almost has to go in that deal. I mean, almost has to. Don't you think? I don't know that anybody else is going to bring back a player that makes that they're not close enough. If they had a core, and then they had some players that they could move, to bring in somebody that they just needed that Robert Horry type character, then maybe. But they're just not that close. They have too far to go. So that a deal for a veteran this offseason has to be for, a starting caliber guy that's going to be an impact guy, and that's most certainly going to cost Gerald Green. I don't think there's any way around it. Or Al Jefferson, but they're not going to trade Al Jefferson. There's no way. I think everybody has pretty much come to that, acknowledgement, weeks and weeks ago, just watching him finish out the season. So, yeah, I think Gerald Green is the guy. I mean, everybody kind of knows that, and we just don't talk about it a lot, and I'm not sure why. Is there not a lot of love in Boston for Gerald, or do people just like the idea of getting, somebody like they thinking of, Jermaine O'Neal or Kevin Garnett or, those kinds of thoughts that, make it okay to trade Gerald Green? I'm not sure.
Well, if they were to try to get Jermaine O'Neal, Larry Bird would want Al Jefferson back, and we don't do that.
No, we definitely don't do that.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard to make a trade. The one I would still be looking for is Pau Gasol. Very unlikely, unless the ownership is willing to make that kind of deal with Theo Ratliff's contract. The guy that's out there who's intriguing to me, and I said it a year ago.
Gasol goes to the Lakers, by the way.
Well, Jason Kidd, who the Lakers were negotiating with in New Jersey, recently admitted that they were trying to move him to the Lakers right up till the trading deadline. I don't know if anybody saw Kidd's line. Last night's game, he was 8-for-12, 5-for-6 from three-point land with 13 rebounds and 14 assists. Now, that's just incredible. He is a money player, and he steps up, when they needed that win. It was the first home game for New Jersey, so they're, technically still on course to hang around against Cleveland. And Jason Kidd just does not want to lose. Now, he makes a lot of money. He's got 2 years after this year, I believe, left on his contract. If they lose Vince Carter over the summer, which is likely, could we pry Kidd away? And what would it take? Would it take Paul Pierce? Would you trade Paul Pierce for Jason Kidd?
Brian Scalabrine.
Yeah, well, we'd throw him in.
Well, I'm glad to see that we're close on a deal here. and I suspect it's a similar discussion that's going on behind the scenes when if this gets entertained, I mean, maybe not Scalabrine. Obviously, maybe Scalabrine, Gerald Green, and Delonte West now are getting, into the range. But, I mean, contract size, those guys don't get it done. So, then you have the whole discussion about Wally Szczerbiak or Ratliff, and it has to be Ratliff. And then you get into the discussion as to whether or not the team, the team has basically come out and said that the whole reason they got Ratliff and made the trade for Telfair was for financial flexibility to sign these young guys. Now, we all know that the Celtics can re-sign any player that's already on their team and go over the cap as far as they need to. But fiscally, there's got to be some sort of a limit on that. And it would take a really special player, I think, for them to trade Ratliff and go into the salary, into the luxury tax zone. And I don't think Jason Kidd quite does it for them. But I have to agree, JB, I think Jason Kidd would instantly put this team, kind of on his back heading into the playoffs. I think he'd be a great addition to if you want to win basketball games right away. There's no doubt about it.
Well, when do you want to win them, Jug?
I want to win them next season, but I don't want to.
That's right away.
Okay, I'll go work the real GM trade checker after the show.
All right.
See what and post my thoughts on the Celtics blog and Celtics Green and Those are the two main ones I post on.
Well, send them over to us.
Two good blogs.
Contact at CelticStuffLive.com, and we'll post them up on our site, too.
Okay, we'll do that.
Excellent. Thanks for the call, Q. We're going to get to some quotes from Danny Ainge here now because we want to hit that up before the show ends. But thanks for calling.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
All right.
Talk to you again.
All right. Thanks for calling. So we're going to move on to these quotes. I can't remember the date. I think it was actually at the end of last week or maybe even the week before that Danny went on to WEEI. And he has been, as Scott said, Danny has been very forthcoming, in just sharing his thoughts. And so, he is known to be, some people think maybe too forthcoming, as Scott suggested. And, part of me really likes that because I like getting an idea of, where the thinking is, where the line of thinking is. But again, I don't read too deep into a lot of it because there's definitely some posturing going on. There's no doubt about it. We have to filter through it. I think that's what makes it interesting in nowadays sports and figuring out, and being a fan, it's kind of sifting through that and trying to figure out, the themes and what you think is valid. But this talks a lot about Telfair and what happened. We saw Telfair play pretty good at the beginning of the season and then, all of a sudden lost his minutes. And, Danny Ainge kind of addresses the style of play and how things, how that influenced things. So we'll take a listen to this. The phone line is still open. If you want to call in, you want to be the first to respond to the quotes, tell us your thoughts, 866-751-9649. We're going to go to the clips now.
We said after that draft day that one of those guys will come out the winner. There's no way that we'll keep both of those guys long term. They're both young and they're both contracts come up at the same time and so forth. But there will be a winner and a loser in that battle. After summer league and even exhibition games, even though Rajon was getting a little bit of buzz publicly in exhibition games, Sebastian was quietly playing fantastic and running the team better and doing some good things. Well, we were running an offense that we called random, which is a secondary offense, fast break push, where Sebastian has the ball in his hands and we're pushing and we're running in the full court and really creating tempo at a much better rate than we did the rest of the year. It's not great for our better players. And so Doc kind of abandoned that, and that's Sebastian's style. So we see Sebastian, as we studied Sebastian, we knew he was a guy that needed the ball more. We knew that Sebastian had not played without the ball in his hands very much in his life. And we did not think Sebastian was a player that could come down the court, dump the ball in to Al Jefferson, and then go stand in the corner and shoot open threes. That's not his game. His game is creating, and his game is having the ball in his hands and doing some things. Well, we kind of abandoned that style of play for the most part. We want a certain style, and Doc wanted to play a certain style. But until you implement it, you don't know for sure. And it wasn't like he completely abandoned the running game, but he did abandon what we called the random secondary offense, and he went to a different secondary offense. It wasn't like our style completely changed. We knew that our team was built mostly around Al Jefferson's low post play and Paul Pierce, that those were our two main guys, and that Delonte was a spot-up shooter. If you remember, Delonte was another part of this. From the very beginning, we never said that Delonte wasn't a point guard. And, so this was an opportunity for us to free up flexibility, to get another player to play the point guard position in Sebastian. But I think that the 08 cap flexibility was a major, major factor in us making this transaction. And had we thought we were giving away, giving up an opportunity to get, a superstar in the league, we wouldn't do it. But we felt that the guys that were available, that we liked Delonte West and Tony Allen, in the same level as the guys that we could have drafted at those positions, let's get a point guard and free up the cap space.
So, kind of reiterates that, but, how ironic is it that that the name of the offense was random?
Well, some great quotes in there. Yeah. I like that clip. They're asking in the pit, was Danny criticizing Doc? Why did we give up the running game? Danny did say that the better players on our team didn't thrive in that style, that it wasn't Pierce's style or Delonte West's.
And you've been intimating this forever, JB, the whole, is Pierce ever going to let any point guard run the offense with the ball, let anybody else have the ball in their hand? And I think, a little bit, Danny basically just backed you up, and as far as those comments.
Especially since at that time, Jefferson was hardly playing. Doc was giving him 12 minutes here, 18 minutes, 6 minutes. Jefferson was not early in the season.
He wasn't healthy, yeah.
It's seemingly part of our plan. Even before his appendectomy, Doc wasn't playing. I mean, you remember the starting lineup was Gomes, Ratliff, Zerbiak. Because West was hurt, he started Telfair and Pierce, that's a pathetic lineup. We kind of anticipated even that early that what the heck was Ratliff doing in there starting? He should be held in reserve and brought in for 3-4 minute stretches and saved for the end of games.
Oh, that was just they were just giving it the good show, throwing in the good 2 cents. we signed him. We thought he might play. There you go, Ratliff.
I can't stand that lineup. When you're undersized,
not.
You're undersized at every position. You have no defense at the three. I've been trying to get Gomes over to the three for 2 years. I mean, it just, this is one of the
everything short of a petition, JB, no doubt.
No, but gee, and I'm proven right. He excelled at the three this year, and we didn't start to look decent until we moved him there, and then we got some rebounding with Perkins and Jefferson at the 4-5 towards the end of the year when Perkins got healthy. So. All these things that so many of us fans, we're talking about, and you'd like to think that your coach knows more than the fans. He sees the players every day in practice, blah, blah, blah. But I would say 95% of everything that we've been saying has been proven correct, and Doc has looked foolish, and it's cost us. I don't know whether Ratliff could have played or if they'd held him out and used him sparingly.
But that was preseason. I'm just not going to put that much stock into preseason, and that's why I say I think it was
He started opening night, Jughead.
Yeah, but it didn't last long. It didn't last long.
Last long because he got hurt.
Right. Well, but I think
go ahead. I was just going to say that I think you guys you're on a different track. I didn't hear what you guys are hearing out of this. What I heard was Danny Ainge says that he took advantage, that Doc Rivers was taking advantage of the players he had in place. Okay, now wait a second, guys. Let's rewind.
And well, Scott elaborated on that. Scott elaborated on it, and Ainge actually he nailed Ainge down to Pierce and Jefferson. Like he specified that.
Right. So were they not here a year ago? Were they not here 2 years ago?
Right. That's a good point.
That's what I'm trying to say, guys. Is where did we think that we were not going to have a slowdown team? I mean, when did the pace change? Because I'm missing.
The pace changes every August when they declare that's what they're going to do for the season. And Pierce even talked about it, saying that basically that's what they intend to do. And then they wind up giving up on it. And that was that last game of the season when he was on in the second quarter. He said that's what Rondo would do, would cause them to stick with it. But he didn't say Telfair would. And I wonder if there wasn't a little.
But it's not about Telfair, though. It doesn't matter about Telfair.
Right.
It matters about the team. I mean, Telfair is worthless. He's gone.
But that could be the explanation for why they thought Telfair would do it, and then it just didn't work out chemistry wise between Pierce and Telfair, and so then it does. But Pierce seems to like Rondo and thinks he's going to be a big time all star in this league, and so maybe
so
Pierce is says that he's more willing to, but maybe it's just maybe Pierce is just saying what he knows the fans want to hear and whatever, or but he did explain it, and that's the thing that I got from that was I don't feel like it's lip service the last game of the season, that I actually admitted to, hey, this is something we keep trying to do every year but it doesn't work out, so we keep adjusting before January back to the slow down offense.
Okay, but is Al Jefferson going to be anything else? But I mean, how can you best take advantage of Al Jefferson as a low post scorer?
You put him in at center.
Well,
you do the up tempo and you put him in at center, and then he is faster.
But even if you don't, I mean, what I'm saying is though, is even if you put him at center, how can you set up an offense around a guy who's best, who's maybe among the best, top five in the league at slowing the pace down, getting the ball on the block, doing his moves, and getting the basket? I mean.
Well, he
I don't
looked,
understand.
He He looked real good, John, with Rondo on the floor, and he was cutting to the basket, getting passes and finishing. He had no trouble scoring when Rondo was the point guard. And I'll contend that most of his best games were with Rondo at point guard.
So why did they go away from it then, guys?
Because Delonte West came back, and Doc Rivers loves Delonte West until the very end of the season when he was absolutely forced to play Rondo when he wanted the team to look good for a few games. The statistics, the plus-minus was so staggering in favor of Rondo that he just had to play him.
But Rondo was playing more than 30 minutes a game there for the last 2 months. I mean, why is it that they went away then instead of earlier? I mean,
well, they came back to a running game when they went with Rondo.
No, they came back to a running game when Paul Pierce was out and Doc was forced to run those small lineups all the time.
And you got to remember, too, that Ainge, and again he's being disingenuous, because it was Danny who said at the end of last year that Delonte West is not really the point guard of the future here, and we want him to learn to play the two.
Now,
it goes back and forth like that. Well, you know, we never really said that he wasn't really a point guard, and that confusion drove me crazy, and it drove some of the players crazy.
They're smart like that, because they never really said that Delonte West wasn't a point guard. What they said was that they wanted him to learn how to play off the ball. They wanted him to learn how to play the two.
It was stronger than that last spring around the draft after they drafted the two-point guards. Danny went out of his way to say that they thought Delonte West was not really a true point guard, and they wanted...
But he's not a true point guard. Danny went back on saying that. I think what he said was in that quote was that, you know, he just, you know, they didn't think that necessarily Delonte... you know, wasn't a point guard at all. I mean, Delonte can play the point. It just has to be off the bench. And I don't think there's any, you know, Ainge didn't specify either way on that. So I'm not going to say that Ainge isn't flip-flopping a little bit on the topic. But it can be explained by the fact that they look at him as a good combo guard off the bench, and they don't want to limit him to only a shooting guard. Because let's face it, if you do use Delonte only as a shooting guard, you're limiting what Delonte can do as well. He's a decent passer. He's just not a starting caliber point guard. He's a great first guy off the bench to back up point guard shooting guard. He can score and he can pass and he can run the offense a little bit, but he's not going to start at either position based on the fact that he's a tweener both in skill and in size.
Well, you say that now, but I don't know how sure I am, but I'm pretty sure that if everybody's healthy next season, Delonte West starts at point guard for Doc Rivers.
That's frightening.
I know, but you'll join my bandwagon then.
Absolutely.
Well,
that's different, though.
That's a Doc issue, not an Ainge issue. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, but, all right. I agree with that.
I think there are two issues. I mean, there are two distinct issues with those, you know, those comments. The one being, you know, as you said, you know, we like Delonte off the ball. You know, now we never said he wasn't a point guard, which is, you know, doublespeak yet again. And the second piece of it is, why is it that we weren't aware of what we had before? You know, even if I understand your argument, John, but you're changing the entire philosophy of two players. I mean, Al Jefferson started to look like, you know, to add, you know, cutting to the basket and so forth. And I think a guy like Rondo can change things, and I want to see them run as much as anybody. But I feel like we're expecting them to do something that maybe just isn't in the cards, and yet we keep hearing again more of this doublespeak. Well, we're going to run, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Why not just say what you're going to do and do it? You know,
I think they want to be able to do both.
Every team in the league is upfront and honest about what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish in terms of their offense. Yet this team, we have this like cloak and dagger type stuff that is just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I don't understand why it is we have to have this comment about we changed our secondary offense here in May, and it is, you know, frankly, the first time they admit something like this. Why do they have to be? Why can't they just say we're going to do something different? You know, or be upfront about the fact that we have guys that play differently? It just to me it reeks of they don't know what they're doing. That's the scary thing.
Well, see, you know what it reeks to me is that they don't want to devalue their own players. I think Ainge has always been extremely cautious about that, and I think that's why you see, and again, this goes to my posturing thing. Telfair is a perfect example. You know, he backtracks on the Telfair thing a little bit because I think, you know, Ainge has always been protective of his young players, and if you go into Souza's article even a little bit more, you see him talk about valuing his youth and, you know, being very defensive of that position about, I don't think we overvalue our youth. We're just patient with them. And, you know, when you look at all of that, I think that that's, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily that they don't know what they're doing as much as, you know, they're trying to sort out the roster. They have a lot of decisions to make. They have a lot of young guys. And so, you know, they're not really sure where they stand. I mean, Rondo, they want to push the pace, but yet they expect Rondo to learn how to run the half court. And that's because they have to be flexible. If this, they can't just do one thing. You know, they have to be more multifaceted than that, or they're not going to make it through the playoffs. They're just not, especially as young as they are. Maybe a veteran team with a dominant guy like Shaquille O'Neal, you can get away with that. You know, you can get away with a one-dimensional style of offense and not have to be so flexible because you have such a dominant player at a position that opens things up for everybody else. And, you know, the other team's game planning is so contingent on whether or not they can stop that guy. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah, but
I mean,
they're not enough at one style, then how can you focus on two?
Well, that's the issue because the players are so young. The players are so young that you really have to do, you know, you really have to do one style and get it down and then move to the other one. But I think the goal is to get that up-tempo thing working. And I think they probably feel like with the players that they have on the squad, you know, they can get people to learn the half court, that they're more concerned about developing a certain culture on this team. So every year they try to make it happen. But then, you know, Docs is under pressure to win games. And, you know, when players like Tony Allen drop, and, you know, you're left with Al Jefferson being the, you know, your key scoring guy, and the only reason the team, you know, is able to even keep pace at all, you have to slow down the offense in that case because, you know, they might have still tried to stick with the up-tempo offense with Tony Allen if he'd stayed healthy, but once he went down, I mean, they didn't even have a shot to go with a high-paced offense. And so, you know, as much as, you know, the injuries by Doc another season to try and prove himself, you know, they also explain a lot of, you know, what's been going on with, you know, just having to constantly change what they're doing because they can't get that consistent, you know, rotation we were talking about. We do have a caller. Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? This is Frank calling again from Boston. How are you?
Excellent. Welcome to the
called
show again.
About a month ago I called you guys.
Yes, absolutely.
Frankly, you know, if I was coaching the Celtics, I'd start West too. I mean, one of the reasons they ran during the latter part of the year is because Pierce was hurt. They had West starting at the two, and somebody actually filled a lane. The problem with Pierce is when Pierce is in the lineup is that nobody gets out ahead of the ball. And so, you know, he waddles up the floor after the play, and he, wants to jack up a three. That's his idea of fast break basketball. You know, once every three or four games he gets out ahead of the ball. And you know, part of it is that he's sort of conditioned to stay in and rebound. But that's Pierce's game. He's a half-court post-up player. That's the way he is. That's what he is. He's 30 years old. It's made him a millionaire, and he's not changing it. And so Delonte West is the better starting point guard for this team as long as they have Pierce, because West can shoot. And he's a dish-off guy. When Pierce gets double-teamed, he can dish off. They can swing the ball to a guy like West, and he can knock down the shots.
And Wally, because if you have Wally out there, there's no way there.
But starting Pierce and Wally together is just so hopeless defensively.
It is.
It's not an option.
Yeah, but that's why they do. That's why they do West with those two guys, because they're going to be slow, and you know they're trying to open up. They're trying to get enough perimeter shooters so that Pierce and Wally do get some open looks too.
Their best starting lineup is West at the point, Tony Allen at the two, and Pierce at the three.
Yeah,
I
agree.
With the two big guys up front, that's their best lineup. You know, let's all be up. You know, I think you know what happens in the draft is less important than what happens with Tony Allen's knee. If Tony Allen comes back and can pick up even 90% of where he left off last year, this is a vastly improved team. You just put Cerbiak down at the end of the bench and look at him as a 6'7" version of Dan Dickow. That's basically what he is. You put him in the end of the, and at the end of the game to shoot free throws because, you know, they can't foul him in a close. You know, if the other team has to foul, you know, you have West and Cerbiak in the game. You know, those guys are going to hit their free throws, and that tactic's not going to work. I mean, that's Cerbiak's value right now. So
if his knees are healthy, I think he's a pretty good player. He's a very, very good passer.
He's a better up-tempo player than Pierce. I agree.
Absolutely. You're the fellow. I remember now, Frank, you agreed with me trading Pierce. And I wanted to throw something out here. Because the Chicago Bulls, they won today, but they look to be humiliated in that series with Detroit. They're starting to talk there about Deng and Gordon again, who are up for contract extensions on July 1st. That maybe they do need to make that blockbuster trade. They were offered here, I think, or maybe somebody was talking about trading Pierce for Deng and Gordon. And with Chicago's success this year, everybody said, "Oh, they'll never do it now." But I wonder if the Bulls would listen to something like that.
Well, I think the Bulls have been trying to move Gordon now for quite some time. He's overrated. I don't think he can really start at the two. He's too short. He's not a good passer. He's not a good ball handler. He's a streak shooter. And when he's hot, he can drop 35 on you in the blink of an eye. And when he's not hot, he's useless. They'll keep Deng. I mean, because he's a great defender. I mean, Gordon is the guy they'll want to move. I don't see Pierce going to Chicago. I think they need a low post scorer. I mean, the player would be perfect for them is Jefferson, but they're not getting him. They need Zach Randolph. That's the guy they should go after. But I'm not sure how they can do it without relinquishing Ben Wallace and his contract. If you look at their salary structure, they haven't got any big contracts. So if they want a 12, 13, 14, $15 million player, they got to give three, four guys. Because they don't have any. Wallace is the only guy they have who makes any money.
Yeah, I presume they're going to have to pay Deng and Gordon this summer.
Yeah, but they're going to be poison pill players, and that makes them. And then they're going to be a base year compensation one the year after that. So for 2 years, they're very difficult to trade, even though you give them the big raise. So they're stuck unless they want to move Ben Wallace.
Yeah, could be right there. I don't agree with you on Gordon either. I think Ben Gordon, the second half of the season, showed some consistency. His assist numbers were way up, and I thought he played very, very well when they put him back in the starting lineup.
I think he's a sixth man. I think he's Vinny Johnson. It's the second coming of Vinny Johnson, and that's the way he should be used. You bring him in off the bench, have him jack up a bunch of shots and score points in bunches, and then you sit him down. I think that that's the perfect role for him. I think putting him in this, the Detroit series has exposed the problems with what they scored, 71 points the other night.
Yeah, they definitely need. They
need a scorer.
But they need that guy in the post more than anything because
exactly,
Wallace is.
Exactly.
It's one thing. Wallace is a defensive stalwart, but he was always with. Part of the reason it was so successful in Detroit is because he had Rasheed Wallace there, who spaced
absolutely
out the floor and allowed Wallace to get that rebounding.
Absolutely.
The Bulls have gone small lineup, and that's worked to an extent. But once you're in the playoffs and, the pace and the tempo does slow down and you have a team that executes with such perfection like Detroit,
right,
and you have such a young team with the Bulls, they're in trouble. Now, had they made the deal for Gasol, we might be watching a slightly different series just because it's such a perfect tandem with the strengths of Gasol and the strengths of Wallace. But, if they'd made that deal, then they might not have Deng and, et cetera.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's always a cost-benefit kind of ratio because it's going to cost you what gets you there,
right,
to do better when you are in the playoffs. So
If they could have done Gasol without giving up Deng, they should have done it. But my guess is that Memphis held out for Deng. But
yeah,
I'll tell you, they've got a pretty good draft pick. And if they can pick up a player like Spencer Hawes, who is a very good offensive player, and who can probably step right in for them for 25, 30 minutes a game, they're going to be looking a lot better next year.
I agree with you on Hawes. I think he could be the steal of the draft if he drops down to 9, 10, 11.
Right.
I just want to I've been looking up some stats on Gordon. He played 33 minutes a game this year. He was 45.5% shooting, 41.3% from three-point land, 86.4% from the free throw line. He averaged 21.4 points with 3.6 assists 0.8 steals and 3.2 rebounds. That's pretty good.
What about turnovers?
Three a game.
Yeah, so he's a one-to-one, you know, he's a one-to-one assist-to-turnover ratio guy. He's not a ball handler.
No, but it's better than Pierce. And, Vinny Johnson, you know, never was able to put up, he was never able to average 33 minutes a game. He was never a 20-point a game scorer.
Well, that's because they had Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. Come on. You know,
well, all right, but you know, it's still Vinny played for Seattle before he came to Detroit, and he never was a starter there either. You know, so I think Gordon is 24 years old in April, and he's gotten better every year. And I say, you know, he's gotten better every month he's been in the league.
Well, I wouldn't trade Pierce for him. That's for sure. I would not.
Not without Deng coming back.
That's
well,
right.
Deng they're not going to give up.
But they're not going to exactly.
Well, wouldn't
so I really don't.
Pierce, in our draft pick. Let's say we get the third, fourth, fifth pick in the draft. Would you trade that pick with Pierce for Deng and Gordon?
No.
Boy, I would.
Because I believe Ainge is right. I mean, people think he's just blowing smoke and trying to manage expectations, but I think this is an extremely deep draft, and I expect the Celtics to get two very good players out of this draft. And I agree with him that a player drafted 6th, 7th, and 8th in this draft could wind up being the best player in the draft. Not just as good as Oden or Durant, but maybe even better. And, you know, I think there are two or three. There's going to be a Josh Howard in this draft, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who it's going to be, but there's going to be a Josh Howard. There's going to be somebody like Alondo Tucker or, I can think of half a dozen guys. The kid from Rice. There are four or five guys who are going to be taken somewhere in the late 20s or even by the Celtics at number 32.
Yeah, maybe 32. Yeah, I was going to say.
There's going to be a guy in that group who is going to be the next Josh Howard. And everybody's going to say, how could 27 teams pass on this guy? And they'll say, well, you know, they'll say the same thing they said about Howard. Well, he doesn't do any one thing really well. You know, that'll be the knock on the guy, and he'll slip, and he'll slip, and he'll slip.
That's what they said about Brandon Roy, and he went 7th last year, or 6th and swapped.
Yeah, but if Brandon Roy were in the draft this year, he'd go 25th.
Right.
This draft is that much better.
I'll tell you something, Frank. If you do me a favor, you're one of the best callers we get. Please call us on draft night. You're a wealth of knowledge, not only about the NBA, but obviously also the college game. I hope you'll stay with us. I really look forward to having you calling that night.
Well, I'll call you on draft night. I'll obviously be up watching. I'm a draft Nick. I don't think I'll even watch on the 22nd. I'll find out in the paper. If they get number three, there'll be all kinds of film clips of the crestfallen look on poor Heinsohn's face when they get number three or number four, which is the odds, by the way.
Sure. Right.
And I think, you know, reading Chris Wallace's stuff on the Celtics website, it looks to me as if the Chinese guy is going to be their pick if they don't get the top two.
Yeah, it's definitely headed in that direction, and we actually have a clip to play about Yi from Danny Ainge. I think we're going to roll that clip because we're right up against the end of the show, Frank.
Appreciate you talking with me.
Well, I got to tell you, it's really hard to hang up. Your call was excellent, and you know, I hope you keep checking in. You know, we'd love to have you call in every week because it was that good of a call.
Well, I can't, but just let me give me 10 more seconds. I agree with Jughead on Rivers. I think it was a big mistake, and I think they're, you know, headed for another 34-35 win season, no matter what the draft turns out to be. And just the guy can't coach.
Yeah, that's JB. Yeah,
unfortunately, JB. All right, I'm sorry. I got you guys reversed, but I agree. That's my view. Okay,
yeah, we agree on a lot of things, Frank. If not on Ben Gordon. Thanks for the call. Hope you call
back
soon.
Good luck.
Well, you know, since he brought up Yi, I'm going to play this quote. We're going to go just a little bit over, but, you know, it's only going to take about a second here. But here's some comments from Ainge, again, from the same WEEI interview about a week and a half ago. So Ainge on Yi Yinlin.
He shoots the ball. He has a little back-to-the-basket move, but he's better facing up. He runs like a deer up and down the court. You know, and he's been playing against some, you know, the top much better competition than NCAA competition, and he's 20 years old. And he's more seasoned with international basketball and his international play than any of our college kids or the younger guys.
And I just have a little concern about whether or not he's really more seasoned than college players or some of the younger guys. I mean, you know, I realize, you know, that the leagues over there are getting, you know, good coaches and putting a lot of work into development. And, you know, Yao Ming has obviously played well. But I just I can't believe that the development is quite there yet, that this guy is more seasoned than, you know, most of the players coming out in this draft at the top anyway.
Well, he's played in international competition, Jug, and there are, as Danny was saying, some veteran players and some veteran big men, especially playing in that Chinese league. And, you know, especially for the big men, he probably has had better competition than Odin has.
Better competition, most likely, but to say that he's more seasoned, I'm not so sure of. You know, I mean, again, you know, sure, he's been up against better players, but that doesn't necessarily mean that his development makes him a more seasoned player just because he's played against some established veterans. I mean, I don't think that that's a direct correlation. I still think that coaching...
He has a confidence in his game playing against professional players. I don't know what seasoning means. I mean, it's you know, rings my bell that the kid has gone up against grown men and been successful. Played internationally, played against the Spanish team and looked pretty good, and the Spanish team went on to win the whole enchilada. I happen to like this kid. I would not be disappointed if we wound up with him.
Yeah, I did know that, and that's part of the reason why I pulled out the clips. And, you know, I'm not going to say that Yi isn't going to be a good player someday or whatever. I'm just really skeptical at this point, and I don't, you know, I don't... As much as I don't know what his coaching is, but I think there are other factors besides the competition that you face. And, you know, I don't know how often he's faced that competition, and I don't know, you know, I mean, yeah, you said he's in a league where there's some veterans. I don't know who those veterans are. You know, I don't know the kind of offenses that they're running on the teams that he plays on. I don't know how well that will translate over here, you know, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, that I'm a little concerned about. One thing I will say, you know, Danny talks about him running like a gazelle, et cetera. If the league is, you know, going to be moving to, you know, this kind of, you know, promoting the small lineups and et cetera, you know, then that's, you know, then that's one thing. You know what I mean? Like, that may fit, he may fit in to the way that the league seems to be moving. But again, you know, I'm still a little hesitant. I like guys like Horford and even Brandon Wright above him just a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Looking forward to seeing him play. He's a bigger, stronger kid than most people have implied.
Well, let's see what happens when they start working out against each other. That's, to me, that's what I'll be interested to hear, is some of the chatter, the guys like Eric Weiss and Jonathan Givony will be able to give us, because that, how he matches up with guys like Wright and Horford and Hibbert and some of these guys, you know. I think Horford is a bit of a mystery as well, because he has been playing with Noah. And I think that, you know, what does that mean when he's standing on his own 2 feet? You know, we've been seeing him match, you know, with the two of them, you know, a very talented rotation down there. And so, you know, there's a lot of questions about a lot of these guys, about, you know, seasoning, maybe, you know, I don't know what that means, but I know it means that that he's had some international competition that none of the college players have. But admittedly, the Chinese Basketball Association is not known as one of the greater leagues in the world, and that, you know, that's why I want to see what these guys, how these guys play when they're, you know, in a workout situation here stateside. Sometimes it can make or break a player. Al Jefferson came here and reportedly didn't do that well. And, geez, that seemed to work out okay for us. But I think seeing these guys, you know, a couple times go against each other will give us a greater idea of how they rank, or should give us a better idea of how they rank.
Well, you know, it was a good point. As usual, we are going over on the show, and I know that that the Sopranos fans are slowly going to be dropping out here if we don't get towards wrapping it up. That might be one of my co-hosts. I won't name which one, but you've got a 50-50 chance at getting this guess right. But hey, before we close, I want to get to one email, because last week John from Montana sent us an email. It sparked the most interesting and intellectual debate of the night on a night where we really didn't have a lot of news. And, I was really thankful. He was talking about the Golden State Warriors and the Mavericks and how the Mavericks didn't play their starting five in the final game of the season. And, basically setting up the matchup against Golden State. I emailed him back. I said, great comments. We used him on the air. It sparked excellent debate. Would love to get his thoughts after he listens to the show. And he wrote us back. We'll end the show on this. He says, great discussion and debate. I just think it's odd that during the last month, Dallas only rested the starting five against Minnesota on April 11th and Golden State on the 17th. They chose to play against San Antonio the day before the Warriors game and the Sonics the day after. In the San Francisco Chronicle, Coach Avery Johnson said that he didn't want to show his hand on how he would play the Warriors if they should meet in the playoffs. Therefore, he would rest his starting five. I think that this argument would only work if the Mavericks had the better regular season record against the Warriors. He goes on to say, I think the Duke was right to say that the Clippers should have won more games to get into the playoffs. I would like him to take a look at the 1995-96 Chicago Bulls. Did they sit out their players just because they had won 72 games and had the number one seed locked up? Is it ever right to intentionally lose a game? Which goes back to his original question of tanking versus sitting out the starting five. Thanks for a great show, John in Montana. So, John, again, you're one of our top emailers. So keep them coming. It was by far the best part of the night talking about that last week. So, keep it coming. We love the feedback, and we want to encourage all of our iTunes listeners to shoot us an email, contact@CelticStuffLive.com. Or you can call our toll-free number anytime during the week. Leave us a message for the show. We'll play it on the air. Or you can, once you find out when we announce who the guest is, you can leave us a question for our special guest that night. The phone number, toll-free, 1-866-751-9649. Guys, great show. And thanks, big thanks to Scott Souza for giving us just about an hour of his time yet again. And, and also for putting some work in and writing some really great articles to spark debate for this show tonight.
Yeah, it was great. And now we can go on to my favorite part of the show, because I know Dookie's prepared. Dookie's got a great, great lineup for us next week. What's going on, John?
Yes, thank you, JB. Due to a great suggestion by my colleague, Mr. Metz, we have decided to hold yet another Bloggers Night. But this time we're going to do it a little bit of a different twist. Next week, the last show before the lottery, we're going to have representatives of the six worst teams, or the teams with the six worst records in the league, plus the Phoenix Suns. And we're going to have them talk about the lottery, talk about their teams, talk about what they want, maybe players that they're looking at in the draft, maybe superstitions they may have or what have you, just to kind of spark some interest and so that we can get an idea of maybe what other teams are, maybe looking at ahead of us. There is a chance, as has been noted, that the team will not get the first pick or the second pick, and instead they're, looking at 3, 4, and God forbid 5. And in that instance, obviously, then what other other teams decide to do ahead of us will play a big role in who the team ultimately takes, or maybe whether or not they trade the pick. So we're going to have those six teams, and also the Phoenix Suns, because of the fact that if Atlanta doesn't win one of the first three picks, that pick will go to Phoenix. So the rich getting richer here. as if Phoenix needs more players who can add to what they do. There's an interesting chance in that. And then, of course, as you guys know, will be the following Tuesday night. The draft lottery will be at 8:30. And we're going to be on that night after to talk about basically how it all went. So, got a busy 10 days ahead of us, folks.
Yeah, that's for sure. And looking forward to it because things are really going to start heating up, you know, the week before the lotto and then right afterwards. We're going to have a lot to talk about. So, John, thanks for doing all the work to line up another bloggers night. And I think this is going to be really interesting. And it's always nice to move out the scope from, you know, to hear what, you know, the national blogger scene kind of is thinking and, you know, what it's like to be in the lottery if you're some of these other teams. That's going to be really excellent. So good work on, you know, putting in the time to get those guys to come on.
Oh, thank you. And thank you to you guys for helping me get some addresses and some names, by the way.
Hey.
There you go.
We pulled together at Celtic Stuff Live. We're a team. You know, we're not dominating off the ball and, you know, jacking threes when we come down the court on a fast break. So with that, we'll close tonight. Great show, guys. And we'll see everybody next week for the Bloggers Night. And, you know, some people in the pit asking just to remind them that we are going to be doing a show on lottery night and draft night. So, you know, tell your friends.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Unchain my heart,
unchain my heart,
baby, let me be.
Unchain my heart,
unchain my heart,
unchain my heart,
cause you don't care about me.
Unchain my heart,
you got me sort of like a pillowcase, but you let my love go to waste. So unchain my heart, oh please, please set me free.